With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Moncrief on News Talk.
We're going to look a bit outside of the borders of our lovely land with Jonathan DeBurka Butler. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Kenya we're going to go to first. And why would the police in Kenya help a serial killer escape?
That's one question I can't answer, to be honest with you. But I know that that's what they've been accused of. It's a bizarre story, to be honest with you. Group of police officers or authorities or whatever you want to call them, prison officers went into... served some prisoners breakfast last Tuesday at 5 a.m. and they noticed that 13 of them were missing. Now, 12 of them were Eritreans who were in the country illegally and presumably were gathered there ready to be deported or whatever. But one of them was a man by the name of Collins Jumaisi. And Collins Jumaisi was arrested on July 15th after he confessed, inverted commas, to murdering 42 women over a two-year period from 2022. His wife was apparently the first of the victims. Now, the case against him was launched after bodies were found in a rubbish dump in a slum area of Kenya. But his lawyers are saying that that confession was extracted from him under duress. All right. And so, but at the moment, it's a moot point because he's missing. He's scarpered. Apparently, he got through a roof of some sort. And the police are investigating it, and it seems that they're investigating some of their own people, right? Eight police officers were arrested initially. Now, five of them appeared in court the day after, suspected of helping the man and presumably the 12 Eritreans as well. I don't know what was in it for them, though.
Yeah, okay. Perhaps money might have changed hands at some point here.
Money may well have changed hands. And if we're honest about it, and if we look back on stories about Kenya and police in Kenya, they wouldn't have a brilliant record, both in human rights and in levels of corruption. That said, the corruption could well be coming from the top and these guys could be fall guys. Who knows?
Yeah.
The investigation is still underway and we don't know exactly the story behind it yet, only the fact that these 13 people are missing and one of them is deemed to be at least extremely dangerous.
Yeah, now, but and also the Kenyan police don't seem to have a great track record in hanging on to prisoners.
They don't. It wouldn't be the first jailbreak.
Yeah.
And there was one, I think, in the last 6 or 7 months involving another man who's accused of murder and he was actually being detained because I believe the murder happened in the United States. He was a Kenyan national. Murder happened in the United States. He managed to flee the country. They were holding on to him to send him back to the United States. He managed to scarper, but they caught him a week later. And presumably he has been or is being or is about to be extradited.
Yes, but it is the police investigating the police here, which...
is never a good thing.
Might make some people a wee bit nervous. Right, the United States we're going to go to next. Now, this is a court case involving Mao's diary or Mao's secretary's diaries.
It's a custody battle of sorts, but it doesn't involve children. It involves, as you said, a former secretary of Chairman Mao, a man by the name of Li Rui. Now, Li Rui is a very interesting character. He came up through the party and he got noticed by Mao. Mao took him in, made him one of his many secretaries that he had, kind of nurtured him. But they had a falling out. And so this guy, Li Rui, between the jigs and the reels, he spent about 15 or 16 years in prison until Mao died in 1976. Then he came back into the fold and he did quite well in the party. Anyway, he kept diaries of everything, right? And those diaries ended up in the hands of Stanford University. Now, it's said, or at least the people who want to hold on to those diaries in Stanford are saying that this was the wish of Li Rui, who died in 2019 at the age of 101, by the way. Okay,
good man.
So that's socialism for you. It makes you live longer. So anyway, the idea is at Stanford are saying that he didn't want the diaries to get into the hands of the communist government. Because they just get rid of them and they wouldn't like what he had written because, you know, there was, you know, secrets that you dare not write about. So his wife took a case against, his second wife, sorry, took a case against his daughter, right, in China. Now, the daughter, which came from the first marriage, she was the one responsible for sending those diaries and papers to Stanford.
Okay.
And the court in Beijing found in the second wife's favour, basically, that the diaries should be returned home to her.
Okay.
Because there was lots of personal stuff about her that she didn't want getting out. So Stanford had now brought a case to California saying, okay, we're the rightful owners of these diaries and we need you to tell the guys in China that we can hold on to these.
Okay.
And so it's all got a bit, it's okay. all got a bit tetchy.
Will they respect each other's jurisdiction, I'd wonder?
I doubt it, to be honest with you.
Because a court in China could say you have to return them. Doesn't, you know, not much they can do about it.
Exactly.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. And Stanford are sort of playing this card of sort of saying, well, you know, the case might have gone ahead and it might have been successful in Beijing, but we were never allowed to attend and we were never allowed to give a defence. So let's bring it to the home of democracy, America,
right,
and we'll get the right outcome.
Okay, now these diaries cover decades.
So yeah, 1935 to 2018, so there's a lot in there.
A lot of them, Because you'd wonder, like, could they not just copy them all and then go, there you go, there's the diaries back, but we have all the information.
So. Yes, exactly. And I believe that I've somewhere between the jigs and the reels, they're allowed apparently to hold, the Chinese would be okay if they held on to the copies and therefore hold on to the information, right? But Stanford are saying, no, that's not the wish of Li Rui. He wanted us to hold on to the heart, the very diaries themselves.
Okay.
And so that's what we want to do. So they're making it look like they're sort of standing up for his wishes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And his memory and his honour and that kind of thing. Now, the sensible thing would be for Stanford to do, to my mind, would be, we'll take the copies, here's the diaries, do what you want, because the value of it is the information that's within the diaries.
One would have thought so, but I suppose it remains to be seen if they produce some sort of written testimony from Li Rui saying, I want Stanford to have
indeed
these things.
Yeah, yeah.
If such a thing exists. The Panama we're going to go to next now. I suppose a story that affects the entire world. They're returning migrants, but the US is paying for this.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But the context is everything, you know, with the US elections going on and the discussion around migration around that. So essentially the Biden administration has said to Panama, we'll give you $6 million for equipment, transportation and logistics for you to round up people that we think are ultimately heading to the United States. And you can put them on planes and send them back home, right? So what they're trying to do here is there's an area. So when South America turns into Central America, it becomes very narrow very suddenly.
And
right?
It's also very dangerous.
It's an area called the Darien Gap, I believe, right? And so last year, 500,000 people went through there, twice the amount that went through the year before. Lots of people dying. It's terrible. Okay, terrible place. So the two reasons why they wanted to stop it, the human cost and also because they don't want people coming to their country, right? So the Americans are trying to stop it further south. So this is the reason they're giving the money to Panama. Now, this is off the back of a promise that the newly elected president of Panama, José Raúl Mulino, made, saying that he was going to close this to migrants, okay?
Yeah.
He didn't like the human cost. It needed to be shut down. So they're saying, okay, that's a great idea. We'll give you money for the planes. So the first people were sent back last Tuesday, I think it was. They were Colombian, 29 Colombians. All of them had criminal records, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
Because I thought if that gets back to the States, that's the type of thing that actually plays into Donald Trump's hand. You see, they're all criminals coming up here, you know? So it's interesting. But at this point, we don't know what's going to happen with the Venezuelans, the people from Ecuador, or the people from Haiti that are coming into Panama from Colombia, whether they're going to get sent back to Colombia and then get sent on to their own countries, Will Colombia go looking for money from the United States to send those people back to Ecuador, Venezuela, Haiti? So it's all a bit up in the air at
the moment. Yeah, because, I mean, as I understand it, even within South America, there's an issue with, like, Venezuelans in Colombia. In fact, Venezuelans in many South American countries.
What is it, 4 million, 4.5 million? Mm. Probably more now since the results, the contentious results of the election in Venezuela. And that's the concern, that it will feed in to, you know, that discussion in the United States. That's a concern in America, should say.
Yeah, no, I like if they start getting planes and say, we're going to fly you back to Venezuela, will Venezuela accept those flights with the...
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Indeed, yeah. Right, Australia we're going to go to next. And kind of a tragic tale, though. It took a long time to come to fruition. This is about a mother sentenced for killing her child.
Yeah, so this is a story that involves a woman by the name of Ellen Rachel Craig. She's 62 now, but she was 25 when she killed her 2-year-old daughter back in July of 1987. I don't know, it's happening, the last few weeks it's been happening a lot, but we seem to be talking about cults quite a bit lately.
Yes,
but this is something that happened yet again because of a cult. She was a member of a community called the Community of Eden. They're based in New South Wales. They had a typical leader, a guy by the name of Alexander Whelan. He was, you know, made everybody have sex with him and was brutal, okay? And he made everybody do chores. And in this case, that included Tilly Craig, who was a 2-year-old, was out sweeping around her house with their mother, wasn't doing it properly according to her own mother, and the mother decided to pick up some plastic irrigation tubing and beat her with it, and she beat her to death. Now, witnesses have come forward since and basically said that Alexander Whelan used to beat this child on a daily basis. So she was suffering terribly. When she realised that she had killed the child, she brought the child to Alexander Whelan, and between the two of them, they got rid of the body. We don't need to go into the details,
okay,
I don't think.
Okay.
Okay? And it wasn't discovered. So she then left. So this was July 1987. She was kicked out of the cult in November of 1987. She returned to New Zealand where she was born. She changed her name twice, apparently. And then in 2019, police got a tip off and then she was arrested in New Zealand and extradited in 2021. And now she's been sentenced to 9 years over the death of her daughter. Now, you can get a maximum of 25 years for manslaughter, but she's only getting 9.
Yeah, did she plead guilty in the end?
She did in the end. She admitted to it and she did show an awful lot of remorse, apparently. But it might have been better for everybody had she kind of shown that remorse earlier and admitted to it.
Yeah.
Because the poor father has been looking for this child ever since and it was driven demented by the whole thing, as you can imagine.
Yeah. And this guy who was the head of the cult, where is he now?
In most of the articles that I had a look at, they didn't actually focus on him because he hasn't been sentenced yet, but I did a little bit of digging and he was actually arrested in or just outside of Sydney on the same day that she was.
Ah.
So he is standing trial. I don't know if it's in the same trial, but he is standing trial as an accessory to murder.
Yeah.
So he will hopefully see a good bit of jail time as well.
Right, Holland we're going to go to next, a rather self-interested story where the royal family were having DJs arrested. Why?
Yes.
They didn't like their playlists.
Well, it was a little bit more than that. So Princess Amalia, who I shared a picture of on my Twitter account there, X account or whatever you call it now, she is a 20-year-old princess in the Netherlands, obviously, and she has had a couple of threats made against her. Kidnapping threats made against her by drug gangs in recent years. So when the Dutch Secret Service or the Royal Protection Service picked up that there was a car seemingly following her from Belgium into the Netherlands, from the Netherlands into Belgium, they alerted Belgian police, who duly followed up. They got these four men, all of them were not white, just to say that, and they pulled them over to the side of the road, arrested them, brought them in for questioning. Now, it turned out in the end that they were just following the best route that the sat-nav was giving them. It was a rental car and they said, okay, this is where we need to go and that's where we're going. And presumably, Princess Amalia was doing the same. But it was enough for them to get arrested. In the end, everything was okay. They didn't face any charges. They weren't, sent down as terrorists. They weren't, tortured or anything like that. But the Dutch royal family had to issue a statement apologising for what they had done.
Yeah, and one of them was a DJ.
Yes, no, I think one of them was a well-known DJ, apparently. Serginho Pique is his name. You know, who knows, he might get the 21st birthday party gig or something like that.
He probably will.
Yes,
yeah.
Hopefully.
He'll do some sort of birthday party. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so, Jonathan?
Yeah, a few things coming up. That Tomatina Festival is happening in Spain. I can't remember the name of the town, but I think it's Bunol it happens in, where all of these people get together and throw tomatoes at each other.
Yes.
It's an excellent thing. And that's happening tomorrow. And then Friday, the SNP, Scottish National Party, have their party conference. That will be a heated conference, no doubt. And then Saturday, very interesting, there are German state elections. One of them is in a place called Thuringia, excuse me. And there's two other states. And the reason that's interesting is because the Alternative for Deutschland party is expected to do very well there and hold the balance of power. Mm-hmm. There's elections next year in Germany. Some people are a little bit frightened of how well these guys are doing.
We shall see what happens. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Thanks,
as
Sean.
Ever, Jonathan de Burker, Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.